Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we don't have to do disclosures or disclaimers because we already did in the first hour and such as that. Anyway, telephone number in here, 254-773-1400. And we have not exactly been bombarded with telephone calls, despite the fact we're being a bit controversial. No one seems to be coming up to the plate. Let's talk about investment stuff a little bit today.
Yeah, good idea.
We had there was a minor blip that bears watching in the economy.
Did you use bear as in like a bear watching?
As in to
it needs to be watched. Okay, gotcha. All right.
As in it will support the weight of watching.
Okay.
But before I get into that, we have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm not the caller you were asking for.
Oh.
I'd like to ask you a question.
Sure.
What would you do? I mean, we are literally being invaded. It's changing our culture. You know, the idea that diversity is good. What happened to the melting pot? What happened to the Publius Unum, you know, from many one? It's completely skewed to where it makes absolutely no sense at all. A couple of years ago, I was in New York City taking a tour, and the tour director very proudly said, we speak 806 languages in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's just a dandy way to be efficient and have one country under God, isn't it?
Well, at the beginning of the 20th century, we had waves of immigrants pouring in from Eastern Europe.
Poland, if you think of the musical West Side Story.
And in the end of the 19th century, we had waves of immigrants pouring in from Ireland and Scotland, who, by the way, did not speak English.
Yeah, if you go to the mid-1860s, there's another fascinating movie to watch as another microcosm of time, and that's The Gangs of New York. It's worth checking out because it's many of the sentiments stated in there by the Americans present are the same ones that you're talking about now. We do need to keep an anchor to our culture, but the melting pot is lumpy. It takes a long time for those lumps to melt into the rest of the pot.
It takes about three generations for people coming to what is now the United States to assimilate fully. And it's been consistent all the way through. My ancestors, Jake's ancestors, came over.
They happen to be the same ones, except
yes.
I have one more than you.
Right. Came over speaking Scots Gaelic. They were almost certainly runaways when they got here. They came over as indentured servants, and we don't know this for an absolute fact. They probably ran away and broke their contract, went up into the mountains, continued to speak Scots Gaelic for probably three generations. And you can still hear it in the language.
I'm Irish.
And so your ancestors did the same thing. And we have, throughout our history, had waves of immigrants who didn't speak English. I mean, unless you are a Native American, in which case your ancestors didn't speak English either, you've come over. Your ancestors have come over as immigrants within the past couple hundred years, and there's Chinatown. There were big chunks of the Scots-Irish segregated in New York and in Chicago and other places, again, who many of them didn't speak English. And so this is nothing new.
As long as we maintain some very specific values here, and this is something that I'm in probably more than full agreement with you, caller, on some very specifics. If you're going to be here, you should be learning the language. If you're going to be here, you should be...
But it's not encouraged. It's encouraged that we adapt to them.
Right. You asked something...
And the inefficiencies that are created by going with their culture. I mean, it wasn't their culture that built this country.
Right. Well, you asked something at the beginning.
You know, I mean, we can be just like Guatemala, and we're going to become more and more like that.
You asked something at the beginning. What would we do? What would I do? And I have a very clear answer for that. It's something that I've been thinking about for a long time because the immigration debate's been standstill for a very long time. We have very good numbers on the economic sides of things about how many jobs are needed in any given profession for migratory labor, for high-tech labor, that sort of thing. If we go to companies that are hiring and we say to them clearly, how many jobs do you need, how many jobs, and then we look around and see how many Americans are looking for those jobs, we can come up with some numbers needed for visas, work visas. This is a productive way of doing it, okay? These people are looking for jobs. These people over here are looking to hire, and we don't have enough people to hire. So we look at that and we say, all right, this is the number this year that needs to be hired in these given areas. Then we put the responsibility on the company that's hiring to bring the people from the other country, either through buses or whatever, and to remove them when they're done. That the their ability to continue to use this system to hire hinges on them using the system appropriately. Then what we're doing at that point is we're using the same concept as the 85 percentile for highway enforcement. We're saying, all right, there are a lot of people hiring illegal immigrants. And that's the truth of the matter. If we talk about an invasion or not, it's an invasion that we are funding.
Yes. That's the big point. The reason you have, and we're talking, there's two different sets of immigrants, by the way. One of illegal, if you want to call them, immigrants. And that is working age men who are crossing the border in mass. And that is a serious problem. And then we have families who show up under existing law and request asylum.
This is a completely different issue.
And so we have to divide. First off, it's a good idea to divide between those two and figure out what we're trying to do. And secondly, there have been bills come before Congress again and again and again. And frankly, it is the it very consistently is the Republicans, because that is their policy, who block them, that would adjust our immigration policy to the 21st century. Our immigration policy right now, our quotas and everything else, were set in the early 20th century with heavy weighting towards Eastern Europe, because Henry Ford, among others, wanted lots of employees. We needed employees at that point as we industrialized from Eastern Europe. We need employees right now, and if you've read the news, there are people all over the country, agriculture firms and construction firms, that can't find employees. They used to get them under a work visa, which the Trump administration has chosen not to staff. And because they haven't staffed them, we're not getting, they're just simply not getting the people in there. And so we've got a problem in the United States in that our economy depends on immigration to continue to function. We're not having enough children. We can either make a law that recognizes that, as we've had in the past when people were coming from Eastern Europe, and we can say, okay, here are the requirements to come into the United States on a work visa. And then if Congress says, okay, if you've been so many years here successfully on a work visa, do we want to take these people who have been paying into Social Security, do we want to give them the ability, after they've worked for a certain number of years, to have a path to citizenship? That seems very reasonable if they've been here and they're working and they got a clean record. But the point is, the law is stuck.
They followed the law to get here.
The law is stuck, and very frankly, it is stuck. And I'm just going to say this: the Freedom Caucus, which used to be the Conservative Caucus, has flat said no more immigration. They want to cut. The Trump administration says they want to cut immigration. They want to reduce legal immigration. The president has said this over and over again. I'm not speaking out of school here. And Republican leadership in the House and Senate have said they want to reduce legal immigration into the United States. But the fact is, employers need the immigrants. So we got this dysfunctionality going on right now.
I've got 2 points to throw in here. Number one, the best way to make sure that people don't follow the law is make a law that people can't follow. It makes it really hard to enforce, because if you're enforcing it, you're enforcing it on the wrong people. The people that are being paid by someone. If you think of it, now the second point is social studies, civics, the concept of what was taught to Boy Scouts when I was growing up, of service, the American value system, how fairness should be looked at, how we should go out of our way to help others, how we should understand the basis that this country was built on. That should be taught a lot more than it is. It's slowly been disappearing from the schools, and it's slowly been disappearing from even the immigration system. That is wrong.
It should be taught. I mean, this
absolutely.
Is back to where I was going. Our culture is changing to be theirs.
Right.
I spent some time during the communist days, the Soviet days in Central America. I guarantee those kids are eating better, have the best health care of their life. They are separated from their parents. I'm not saying this is the right thing to do, but you haven't answered yet. What do we do?
Okay. I just did answer.
I've just given you houses for them.
No, here's what we do for the right now moment. And we just gave a long-term solution for the right now. What's going on right now? There's a very easy way of doing this. What we do is we can even use the same facilities that are being used today. We keep the families together. The reason why you separate children from families in a law-breaking situation is because it's in the best interest of the child to do so. When I am the chairman of a nonprofit child school, preschool through elementary. When the state shows up and does an inspection and says you've got to have a certain number of square footage for every child in order to sleep there, if we don't do that, the school gets shut down. The facilities that are being used to house children in South Texas are in violation of dozens of those rules. Dozens of them. They have been given reports to them saying you're in violation, but there's not enough room. So we either need to throw a lot more money at this.
Yeah, that would work.
We can't be the concept of putting up a tent city for minors in the desert of Texas in the middle of summer is absurd. So I will be in full agreement with you, caller. Our society, our values need to be protected. They are not being protected. But this is not the way. Wait just a moment. Our values are under assault. We should not lose our values to fight that. When we take children from parents without telling the children or the parents when they will be reunited, because we don't know, because the court system's overweight, it's way too long in the wait for your hearing. It could be years that these kids are separated. They have no idea. In many cases, the parents don't even know where their children are. The punishment must fit the crime. That is, when I pledge to the flag, and I am a big proponent of this, the last two lines to this is one nation under God, and I say that very proudly, with liberty and justice for all.
You left a word out, indivisible.
Indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let me say that in one of the bills in Congress right now is a quick solution. On both the bills in Congress, and that is the E-Verify requirement to make employers use E-Verify.
Yep.
If I hire somebody, I have to go on and make sure that person is legitimately allowed to work in the United States.
And if you're hiring through a visa, pay for the transportation.
And the president said he would veto it. Now, I don't get that. He wants a law that's more strict, and he wants a law with $26 billion with no increase in taxes to build the wall. Okay, fine. The point is, he ain't going to build the wall across Texas because there's going to be a rebellion in Texas because of all the farmers' land he's going to have to take because the Rio Grande doesn't run in a straight line. That's all beside the point. The issue is using the new policy of separating children from their parents as a legislative lever, which the president said he wanted to do, a negotiating tactic, to get a bill passed that he likes. By the way, another thing is, and I'll just say this bluntly,
Republican members of Congress, several of them were quoted, were saying he obviously hasn't read the bill that he said he's going to veto because it gives him everything he asked for.
Well, that's the thing. The White House has come out again after that. He didn't know which bill he was talking about. There was an original, much more liberal bill that was about to get voted on without the leadership's approval. That got nixed because they had two other bills to talk about. So the president may or may not support the more moderate immigration bill. We don't know. And we got another caller on 773-1400.
You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a thought. I wonder if this invasion has been organized by the Democrats.
There is absolutely no evidence to indicate that it has.
What I can tell you is that, call it invasion, call it a trickle across, call it a flood across, it's a market-driven event. If we have money that we're willing to give people to come here and work, and that's why they're coming. I mean, there are a lot of people that say this is for welfare and all that stuff. Well, that stuff's been tightened down pretty hard. You got to be an American citizen to get a lot of those services, or you have to have a valid visa. So come forward to who's organizing this. And the answer to that is a very interesting question. You know, it's going to sound like I'm coming out of right field for a second, or left field. If you go to McDonald's in Idaho or in Texas, you shouldn't be surprised to see the menu be identical. That's interesting, because there's a corporate office somewhere that's setting that menu. The same's true for Applebee's or Burger King or any other major chain restaurant. The menus are going to be very similar.
How does that work in a Chinese restaurant? The Chinese restaurants have similar menus across the nation. And the answer is, it's market driven. When you show up and you want beef with broccoli, and that's what you ask for because you don't know what those other things on the menu are, they have to adjust their menu to what you want. That's market driven. When we're talking about immigration, if we're paying people to do a job, and we're not doing a lot of research as to where those people are from, we're just going to give them money to do it, then that's going to cause people to come from a lot of other places to come and get that money.
And that
that's not organized by Democrats or Republicans or independents. It's organized by our market.
And it really boils down to something very simple. Employers are hiring illegal immigrants, and in many cases, they know they're hiring illegal immigrants. And every survey I have seen so far suggests very strongly that the reason George W. Bush didn't crack down on it is many of those employers are contributing Republicans. Most of the businessmen tend to be Republican. And many of the people, the majority of the hiring, every survey I've seen of illegal aliens is done by Republicans. That's what draws them here. And if you, I don't know what town you live in, I live in Salado, and I know that we have turned down several people who wanted to do landscape work around our house. They'd show up and only one member of the party would speak English, and I would ask to see green cards of the entire workforce.
As you should if you're employing
someone.
And they
turn around and walk away. But they're doing business all over Salado, these same organizations.
Which is an extremely conservative Republican area.
With pretty clearly, so you got pretty clearly a bunch of Republicans who are paying what are also pretty clearly illegal aliens, and they're just kind of closing their eyes and saying, it's okay if I play the illegal aliens. It's not, there's nothing wrong with that. Actually, there is. It's against the law. It's a violation of the law. But the government has chosen not to enforce that aspect of the law. Just spend more money guarding the border. Well, let me tell you, if we stop hiring illegal aliens in the United States,
they won't come across the border.
That's a very simple factor.
And this is something that people want to hear something they can do today when it's not about the separation of families, not about any of that. How do you fight illegal immigrants? Stop paying them. That's the simple answer. The people that I know that have hired illegal immigrants, and I know a lot of them, for yard work, for all kinds of things, they don't ask because it's not on your mind. Somebody rings the doorbell. They say, I want to mow your lawn. It's going to cost $50. They go inside, they say, go mow the lawn, here's $50. Do you want to come back and do it again next week? If you really believe that there should not be illegal immigration, put your money where your mouth is. Hire somebody that's going to charge you $70 to do it, because that's the alternative.
Trump was elected on immigration.
It's true.
And he's trying to come through with it, and I still can't believe there's something else that's more sinister behind it.
Well, the only thing sinister behind it, every study by Republicans and Democrats has found the same thing,
is that employers are hiring illegal aliens. It's that simple. If we stop hiring them, they'll stop coming.
Yeah. The sinister aspect of this, well, I lost him. The sinister aspect of this is in the lack of sinisterness. It's kind of funny when you look at big injustices of the past. Generally, they're not started with people saying, "Hey, let's go commit an injustice," whatever the injustice is. It happens slowly over time and ratchets up until at some point when the general public hears how it's being dealt with, they're shocked and they say, "Why are we doing it this way?" We need to start at the beginning, and we've got a caller waiting on 773-1400. This is the end of the question that from two calls ago.
3 minute stations.
The
three
idea
minutes to your
here.
Next Fox News 3030.
We need to start any negotiation with what is it that we want to accomplish. We can't say we want to stop illegal immigration as what we want to accomplish. That's not really accomplishing anything. That is kind of moving. It's barely treading water. That's okay. The dam is leaking, and the only thing we want to do is fix it. Why do we have the dam? Well, let's say immigration needs to be controlled. We need to control it in a way that is good for our economy, good for our culture, good for who we are as Americans, whatever that may mean, with boiling pot or whatever. We need to have people that come here that are interested in contributing, that are interested in ethics and morals, that aren't going to be lawbreakers. That's what we want. So I think most of us can agree on that. You start with the common ground. Then you start moving in on the individual aspects of what to do at each thing. Whether or not we enforce it at the border or across the United States, it's less expensive to do it across the United States, especially if you charge the business owners to do it, because they're getting cheap labor. They should be able to afford to self-enforce. And we have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm a retired military and a proud veteran of this country, and we just need to be blunt about the policy concerning kids at the border. It's evil.
I agree.
There's no other way to put it. It's evil.
I agree.
And President Trump has to have a black heart to actually support a policy such as that. It's shameful. It is shameful. We're better than this as a country, and I can't believe it.
I can't believe it.
It's indefensible.
I agree.
It's indefensible.
I'm going to step in, and I'm going to say I don't think that the president has a black heart. I don't think he's thought about this. I don't think he's gone through and put his child in the shoes, in his mind, of these immigrants at age two, when they could not know better.
Well, as a parent, that should be a natural reaction to a policy such as that. I mean, to me, it's something that doesn't really have to be thought through if you're a parent.
Well, let me say something here. If you want to put some blame someplace, put it on Congress.
Exactly.
Congress, he is enforcing existing law.
Now, he's got a choice on that law, but he's enforcing it as it's written.
The Attorney General has chosen, and the Director of Homeland Security at the President's direction, have chosen to enforce it in a draconian way. But an immigration reform law during the Obama administration and during the Trump administration both have been available with a majority of Congress to vote in favor of them, and each time, and I'm not saying this because I am a Republican. I've been a Republican all of my adult life.
Yes.
But I'm saying it is the Republicans in Congress, the Republican leadership in Congress, has refused to allow it to come to a vote each time because they are concerned about offending the people who support them.
Yes. Well, it's cowardly. Congress is very cowardly. I agree with that.
Let me ask you this question. If you're in this district, have you contacted John Carter?
Yes, I have.
Okay, well, keep contacting John Carter. Keep contacting your senators. His sister, my daughter, worked for Representative Carter as a volunteer, an intern for a summer. And one of the things she told me is, if you want to change a congressman's position on something, you, back then it was mail, you give him enough mail and he'll change his position, because he recognizes that the constituents are the people who either vote him into office or vote him out. Now, John Carter's pretty well insulated, but if he gets an avalanche of messages that we need a reasonable immigration law, and you identify which bill it is that you want to see passed, and you tell him, let's support this bill, and he doesn't, then come November, you have the option of electing somebody else. And
the, from a behavioral,
but most people have not contacted their congressman.
There was a study that was done in the 1960s in the United States by a man who had immigrated from Germany, a Jewish person who'd immigrated from Germany after the war, and was convinced that America was this beautiful, amazing, ethical place, and loved the country. And he had a hypothesis about what there must be something different in the German way of thinking to allow them to do what they did, and that the Americans would never do this. So he set up an experiment. They made a movie about the experiment. It has to do with fake electroshock therapy. And what he discovered is that if people think that they are taking part in a larger organization that's somehow official, the vast majority of people will just go along with it until someone speaks up loudly enough. Only about 10% of the people will do that, though. Well, this is one of those areas I will debate all day long on tariffs. I feel like that's a reasonable use of governmental power, even if it's uncomfortable. I'll debate on taxes. But when we go to a draconian system of separating parents from their children with no knowledge on when that will end,
exactly.
No easy statement to the parents, you're going to get your child back when we deport you on X date. No, there's some court hearing that's not even scheduled yet that could be in 3 years because we're overloading the system. The kids.
Actually, it's a sad commentary on our humanity in this country at this point.
Well, I don't. It's only a sad commentary if America does not react to it.
If we allow this to happen, if Congress just says, okay, we'll use this as a negotiating tactic, we'll give you what you want out of this, there should be a law that doesn't have anything to do with anything else at this moment that says this is wrong.
Well, there actually was one introduced and didn't go anywhere in the House.
Well, that's one of the issues that I have a problem with. When we're so divided by party that we can't look at our humanity, the fact that we are Americans and this is against every value that we hold dear, if because they're afraid of dissing the party line, I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, you're an American and this is wrong.
And one more comment on immigration. What some people need to understand and get through their heads is that the demographics in this country right now is irreversible. They're going to change. And some people are going to fight that tooth and nail. But the bottom line, the demographics in this country are changing due to birth rates and certain other situations.
They've been changing.
That's just a fact.
They've been changing since before the Declaration of Independence was signed.
Exactly.
This is part of the nature of who we are as a nation.
Exactly.
And, you know, you're completely correct. But there's always a reaction to it. As a matter of fact, if you read all of the writings of Benjamin Franklin, you find out that he was firmly against allowing the Presbyterians,
the Scottish,
the Scots-Irish front, to live among the civilized people.
Yes.
And he coined the term "let the painted fight the painted," meaning that the Picts,
the blue painted Scots should fight the painted Indians.
Should be sent to the West where they could fight Indians, and you know, in many cases, their land was then taken away from them that they had settled. But
why I always get a chuckle when I hear people say that we were basically founded on the principle of religious freedom. They need to actually read a little more. They see it wasn't as black as white as they think.
We're evolving as a nation, and you know, we listened to I won't say who because his name is in ill repute right now, but we listened to a speaker I thought was very insightful, and he used the analogy of a forest fire. We're going through a forest fire right now, And there's a lot of things that are being torn down, relationships that are being torn down internationally.
Alliances,
And the thing about a forest fire, it looks terribly devastating at the time, but it's necessary to have these from time to time so that air and water can get to the young plants and they can grow up. And we as a nation go through this. I think we're going to come out of it. We have, at least it's happening at a point in time when we have a strong economy. And we will make it through this. One of the things we have to be careful about, though, and this is my opinion, not judging, as you said, you were talking about a black heart. I don't know what kind of a heart Donald Trump has. I only know his actions, and I can disapprove of his actions. I can also say that he's president of the United States, and he was elected under our Constitution. And you, as I, took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. Well, under our Constitution, he's the president. Now, the issue is, do you get active and support somebody else for president, or do you just rail against the existing president? I personally do not want to see Donald Trump impeached.
I don't either. That would be a shameful thing for our nation. It would be detrimental to everything that we stand for. I would like some checks and balances.
Well, you know, we talked about this. One of the things, we didn't talk about this specifically, but we've talked about pieces of this. The Constitution has tariffs as the sole responsibility of Congress.
Right.
The Constitution has immigration as the sole responsibility of Congress. And what they've done, what Congress has done over the years, is they've delegated power to the executive. And now we have what's called an imperial executive in the United
right.
States.
This is the opposite of what was intended under the Constitution. But Congress, over the many years, have said we're going to have an executive that would only use these in times of great strategic peril.
Well, I think we might want to move on to another subject.
Yeah, I agree.
And do we have commercials to do?
We do. We have some commercials to play. We've got a phone number in here if you'd like to join the conversation. The phone number in here is 254-773-1400. We'll be back on the other side of these commercials with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We talked about first hour, and I think it's worth mentioning again. It's an interesting event occurred that may mark the top of this economic expansion that's been going on since 2009, and that is that industrial production dropped. It only dropped a little. It dropped 0.1%. But the reason it dropped 0.1% was because the manufacturer of one truck part had a fire in a building. Now that was the technical reason. If we look a little deeper.
When one issue affects a national number, one issue in one
right.
factory affects a national number, it means that we are operating so close to capacity as to be ready to break.
But anecdotally, there are many reports, and I've actually heard some, that both service organizations and manufacturing organizations either can't get the parts they need or the materials they need or can't get them shipped back out in a timely fashion without paying extra, that our economy has bumped into one of the limits. At the same time, though, consumer spending just hit a record. So where consumer spending is up, the ability to get the goods and services to where the consumer can spend on them is at pretty much at its limit. And let me tell you, when I say it's at its limit, try driving I-35 on a regular weekday during business hours to Austin or San Antonio, and you realize we have hit capacity on a six-lane highway, much less through Temple.
Right. What's going to happen here is you're going to have a lot more trucks driving at night, which is dangerous because these same truck drivers are also going to be driving during the day.
Well,
where they can get away with it.
I will say that one of the restrictions that's rolling in on truck drivers
right.
is the
computer.
Digital logbook, which we got a caller in here a couple of weeks ago that moaned about the digital logbook. But the digital logbook won't allow drivers to fake rest periods and put them in a position where they have to get adequate rest. And that'll help a lot. But
it's not going to help the logjam that is trucking. It's going to make it worse.
From an economics point of view, we're getting confirmation of something that I think is important for everybody to understand, and that is we're probably going to see stocks continuing to weave around. Maybe, I don't know, generally at the beginning of July they take a dip historically. I don't know that they will this year. We've got two major forces functioning here. We've got the tax cuts and the additional government spending.
Which is fantastic for the economy.
Which is stimulating the economy. And then we've got the tariffs going into effect.
Not good for the economy.
Which is hurting the economy. And they're balancing out. It's a very interesting dynamic. They balance out so the stock market doesn't go anywhere. Well, I think what we're going to see is the economy continue to accelerate into the third quarter. And we will see sometime late in the year a pretty big rally get kicking. Right now, the stock market, in our humble opinion,
or not so humble, depending
on
who you ask,
is not overpriced. But I suspect
I agree with that.
Come fall, it will take off and run up to fair value and maybe keep on going. And if so the issue is, this is a good time to invest. It's not a good time to get out or build up your reserves, although it's always good to have reserves because things happen that are unexpected. Sometime 2019 probably also will be a good year, but we'll see ourselves hitting more and more limits. And if this is true, if we start to see more and more bottlenecks in the economy, we start to see inflation begin to take off and the Federal Reserve begin to accelerate interest rate increases. This is generally what causes
what recessions start with.
And then the thing to watch, and this is pretty critical, is the yield curve, which people don't pay much attention to. That means basically, right now, the shortest point on the yield curve is the federal rate of 2%. You go all the way out to 2.98%, 2.97, which is the 10-year. You just look at that alone.
You can see there's not a lot of difference for holding something 10 years versus a very short period of time.
The Federal Reserve announced this week that they intend to do four quarter point rate increases this year and three more next year. Well, that'll take it up to about 3.5%. And if the short term rate is at 3.5% and the long term treasury, which people don't pay much attention to, stays around 3%, you then have an inverted yield curve. And an inverted yield curve at every point in the 20th and 21st century where we've measured it is followed 18 months later by a recession.
Let me explain that a little bit, because there's a reason for it, and it's a good reason. And just to kind of come in and give some background here. If you're in the house market, you're looking around to buy a house, and you're looking at mortgages, and you want to get pre-approved beforehand, they give you some options. They say, hey, do you want an adjustable rate mortgage? Well, that starts with a low rate, but it may go high later. We don't really like adjustable rate mortgages. Okay. Well, now you've got a choice between a 30-year mortgage or a 15-year mortgage. And the interest rate on the 15-year mortgage should be a lot less than the interest rate on the 30-year mortgage. Why? Because if you're a bank and you're giving someone a loan, or you're a business owner giving an employee a loan, and you expect to be paid back relatively shortly, and you think they've got good creditworthiness, or you wouldn't be giving them this, then you're not going to charge as much as if they're going to hold that money for a longer period of time. When that reverses on the averages, when we look out at what is being paid on long-term notes or long-term bonds, and it's less than what's being paid at short-term, then why would you get one? Why didn't you just sell all of that and go to short-term? That's what causes recessions. When people are selling their long-term obligations because they're not paying enough, that also has a tendency to raise the interest rates over time, but that's, you know, it has to happen in a recessionary type situation.
There's a very specific aspect of investing that I wanted to discuss for a second, and it's annuities in general, with guarantees. Any annuity that has a guarantee. Now, there's two kinds of annuities. Basically, there's variable annuities and there's fixed annuities. I realize that there are variable rate annuities, what are the market-based annuities or whatever they're called. Indexed.
Equity indexed.
Yeah, but those,
they're scary.
Those are a form of fixed annuity. And those are issued with certain guarantees issued by the company that offers the guarantee. If you purchase a guarantee, an annuity guarantee of some kind, either in a variable annuity or in a fixed annuity, from an insurance company, there's a couple of things I have found people simply don't recognize.
pretty important things.
And number one, if that same company retains the annuity contract, let's say it's 30 years, let's just say. Let's say you're depending on it over a 30-year period. You are making a bet that that single company, that single corporation, will remain solvent and in business for 30 years. And if you look at the number of corporations that are not in business today that were in business 30 years ago, that should be sobering. The second thing is, there is nothing that keeps an insurance company from selling a block of annuity contracts to another company. And that has been going on a lot recently. There were annuity contracts issued years ago when interest rates were higher that have minimum guaranteed rates of 4%. Now, at the time, nobody ever dreamed
this is when
that interest rates would fall far enough that a guaranteed rate of 4% would bankrupt a company.
This is when mortgages were at 6%, and they thought that was low.
So what's happening is we're seeing more and more and more annuity products with guarantees of 4% on them that are being sold to less financially stable companies. And the way these sales are going on, and this is not something that's going to make headlines, but is something that's happening, is they're sold to a company that's owned by another company, but there's a wall around the company that buys it, so that if it doesn't meet the guarantees, if it goes under,
the parent company isn't responsible.
There's nobody that's liable. And it is happening with a greater frequency over the last several years, and probably will accelerate, because as interest rates go up, the value of a bond portfolio falls. And a lot of these guaranteed interest rate annuities are backed by a bond portfolio owned by the company, the insurance company that issued the annuity. And it really boils down to the fact that if they get in a position where people start to liquidate them, such as in a financial crisis, they may have to start, and we've actually seen this happen a few times, they may have to start liquidating their bond portfolio at below the price they paid for them. And if that starts to happen, they become insolvent, and the annuity then is thrown in the basket. You become an unsecured creditor of the insurance company. Annuities are just an interest in a black pool, if you will, of investments that you can't see. Now, you can't see the value of the investments go up and down on the market. Therefore, you feel very secure because
right.
The company is guaranteeing it. But it's one of those things that, very frankly, if an annuity company or an annuity guarantee offers you a rate that looks really, really good and you say, what a bargain, what a deal.
It's probably because it's too good.
It probably is something you should stay away from. It is entirely possible, if you want security over a long period of time, to buy what's called a laddered series of treasury securities. Will you get a guaranteed 4%? Absolutely not, because the longest term treasury out there isn't going to pay you 4%, and it's going to go up and down in value as interest rates fluctuate. But any time that somebody offers you a guarantee
that's more than the federal government's
right.
willing to pay, it means you're taking risk.
And you're taking a very severe risk that company may not be there in the future. So paying now for 30 years worth of security can be quite a serious mistake. And the reason I bring this up, this is Jeff speaking, is I've been doing this now for 35 years. And 35 years ago, we were at the peak of the interest rate cycle. And I was observing insurance companies going under and people having to cry in their beer as their annuities didn't pay off. Their retirement annuity that they were going to use to retire on, that was going to pay them a fixed number of dollars every month, suddenly stopped paying the fixed number of dollars every month because the company went bankrupt. And some of those were resolved as recently as a few years ago. And let me tell you, that means that they were unresolved for 30 years with as little as 30% of the value that the people thought they had in that annuity being paid to them. Are we going to go through that again? I think so. Interest rates are on the way back up. We are going to go through a series of rising interest rates. If it follows history, it'll be 12 to 15 years of rising interest rates. It could be longer. During that period, bond portfolios are going to grow more and more shaky as time goes by. And if at some point you have any disruption in the system, you could be in a lot of trouble in a very short period of time and not even realize it. I saw this happen in a number of cases where you had a very stable insurance company that simply sold, was either the company was either sold or the contracts were sold to another company that was less stable, that stripped the value out of the portfolio and promptly collapsed. So one of the things that people have asked us about recently is whether buying an annuity with some kind of guarantee on it is worth it. And my humble opinion, you're making a heck of a long bet, paying for it up front, making a heck of a long bet on a single company, being completely honest and completely acting in your best interest, which is, by the way, not what they're structured to do, for the rest of the time. You can achieve as much security, if you have a reasonable amount of money, using a portfolio of secured bonds as you can by buying an annuity. Only the difference is you'll be able to see them, it will be liquid, and yes, you'll notice that the liquidation value, if interest rates go up, will decline over time. So you have to be willing to hold them to maturity. But you won't be in the risk of suddenly finding out that the company that you purchased them from wasn't obviously acting in your best interest.
All right, I'm gonna kind of begin a wrap up here, if that's all right.
All right.
Number one, we are in a golden era. The United States GDP is growing fantastically. People's pay is going up. Profits are up across the board. We just got a big tax cut. That is fantastic. Now is the time to plan for when it's not a golden era. For be the grasshopper or the ant, which one? You don't want to be the grasshopper here. Store some of what you're making away. Invest it for the long term. Make sure your debts are taken care of. Don't take on lots of extra debt thinking that next year's going to be a bigger boom than this year. What you do, if it is a bigger boom, that's fantastic. But don't make the bet that it will be, because there are a lot of times when that's not the case. Prepare in advance for purchases, especially the big ones. And I know this is hard. I've looked at the books of car sales dealerships. Their sales go up drastically when they have big inflated gorillas on the lot. People make $30,000 purchases because there's a pink gorilla.
That's a very good reason.
So be aware that that is what we are tempted to do. Be aware in good times we do that more than in bad times. Plan for the bad times. Plan for your existing purchases. Don't let a pink gorilla be the reason why you make a $30,000 purchase. I don't care if you've got $20 million or $20,000. If a pink gorilla is influencing that kind of a decision for you, you are not thinking about it. You need to know what you want to drive before you go out and drive something. Begin with that. Prepare now. We're in a golden era. Use the golden era and enjoy it. Now is the time when we should be protecting our values. It's a lot easier to protect our values when we're uncomfortable. If we're in the depths of a recession, we are a lot more feisty about people taking what is valuable from us, whether that is our ethics or our money or our property. In good times, it's really easy to encroach on our freedoms and our properties and our values. Don't let that stand. We need to look at it in a bad time and a good time in the same way. It's a good time for us. Because of that, people want to come here. Let's not punish them higher than the crime. Let's make sure that the law is being followed. But we're doing some things on the border that shame me. I have never been ashamed of my nation. When Abu Ghraib took place in Iraq, that was not an official act. It took place in an official institution. And we come from a military family. This goes way, 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 way back. I have a great number of friends still in the military. All of them were ashamed by those actions, but not of our country, because our reaction to Abu Ghraib was immediate. We said, this is wrong. What's happening on the border with families being separated is sponsored by the United States. And we cannot let our values be usurped like this. We've got to do something about it. Contact your representative. Contact your senators. Say, this isn't right. We can go back to normal debate. You can want the wall. You cannot want the wall. That's kind of irrelevant at the moment. We're separating families without letting them know how long they've got separation. That's just wrong. So that's my wrap-up. Enjoy the golden era, but don't let our values be eroded.
Well,
did you have anything you wanted to say now that I did my soapbox?
Keep your eyes open. Linscloe Private Ledger in Massachusetts, it's the only state that it got on them for this, sold a bunch of unregistered illegal securities, millions and millions of dollars of them. Now they're being required to buy them back. If somebody offers you some kind of super deal that's not liquid and you can't sell it, maybe they'll give you back a little bit of money from time to time or something, and it's not liquid. You want to be extremely careful. I would venture to say simply don't do it.
If you'd like to contact us off the air, we do give fiduciary investment advice to individuals, foundations, and families. You can contact us locally at
254-947-1111.
You can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com.